The Andy Social Podcast, episode 306, 30 motherfucking six. And my guest on this episode is, well, he's a legend. He's a legend. And I know I'm calling myself out again on this. I'm a broken record, but I never use the word legend lightly. Just putting it out there on record. Every time I use the word legend, I freaking mean it. And this is no exception. Silvio Massaro, vocalist, frontman of Melbourne metal band Vanishing Point. They've been around since the mid-90s. Silvio's one of the OGs. Great guy. An amazing band. And I'll tell you what, I think some of you guys know already, but I'm a bit of a fanboy. Vanishing Point were one of the first bands that I got attracted to when I was first discovering Australian music, Australian metal music in particular. And their early albums are just incredible. And I know that I've said this many times in the past, but I'm going to say it again. Tangled in Dream, in particular, is one of the greatest Australian albums of all time. Like, not Australian metal albums of all time, Australian albums of all time. And obviously, in the context of the VP catalogue and all the great releases that they put out over the years, I know Tangled in Dream is not underrated. It's often held in high regard and referred to as favourites, a favourite by a lot of fans. But outside of VP, man, ridiculously underrated. And I would encourage anybody to add that to their playlists. Give the album a shot. It's just an amazing example of songwriting craftsmanship. It's just it's one of my all-time favorite albums. So I'm going to get off my soapbox and my subjective views on my favorite songs and albums and all that sort of stuff and get into this episode. A great band, a big fan of what they do. They've got a brand new album that came out in 2020 called Dead Elysium. I'm going to have links to the new album, to the band, social media, streaming services, everything, merch, everything will be in the show notes over at andysocial.net and andydowling.net. The guys are getting around on tour. They've got some rescheduled dates in 2022. I'm going to have them in the show notes as well, but they're going to be getting around in May and June around Australia. So go and check that stuff out. And hopefully at some stage in the future, we'll all get to start touring overseas. So some of my international listeners will hopefully get to see Vanishing Point sometime in the future. But enough crapping on from me. Please enjoy this great chat with the man himself, Silvio Massaro. Apologies, and I guess, you know, my condolences for the postponement of your tour that was meant to happen very shortly. And now I guess we're pending some revised dates and you guys are probably, you know, sitting in limbo a little bit trying to work out what the next steps are.
We are, actually. We're a lot closer to probably confirming some dates, probably as close as maybe even next week or the week after that.
Nice.
But yeah, it was, you know, it's very disheartening when you have to sort of postpone gigs. No one really wants to do that, especially when people have, you know, bought and paid for tickets and, you know, looking forward to something more positive in light of what's going on in the world at the moment, you know. So, but it was inevitable. The writing was on the wall. And I guess for a lot of venues, they were very hesitant about, you know, putting on such a tour for a lot of bands, not just us, but just for a lot of bands as well. So yeah, we definitely had to make that decision and say, right, like we've been dragging our, you know, feet for this long in making that decision. Let's just make it final and look towards, you know, postponing the whole Eastern leg and look at rescheduling some dates and just moving forward that way. Hopefully we don't need to postpone again. some other apocalyptic event might happen and that may, you know, cause us to postpone again. But let's hope nothing else happens, yes?
Touch wood, touch something, you know, just not to jinx anyone. But, yeah, it's tough, man. I've been you know, from our side in the band, when all these things started to happen early last year, I think everybody, we sort of thought, oh, well, it'll be a few months off, you know, and we'll kick back into it later in, you know, 2020. And then you get to around September when people were starting to predict when things would start to go back to normal. And then you realize, oh, no, not quite. And then it just these fits and bursts of just being sort of led along by, because no one really knows what the future brings. And even now, you know, I like we sort of made a decision in the band that we just would not, we're just not accepting anything. We're not booking anything, but you know, we still get the email or the DM from somebody saying, hey, would you like to do this? It's like in 6 months time or 7 months time, it'll be safe. Don't worry about it. And we're like, no, it's okay. We don't want to, you know, we'll just sit on our hands for the time being. And sure enough, that was 6 or 7 months ago. And those dates are rolling around now. And they're all these dates that are getting canceled or postponed. And you sort of sit back and go, shit, you know, when's that line in the sand where finally, you know, it's they're going to go ahead and we can start sort of getting back to some, you know, reliability when it comes to putting on tours and all this kind of stuff.
Yeah. Yeah. Do you guys have any tours lined up like within that time period where everything sort of shut down or?
No, we started to pencil out some stuff because at sort of towards the end of, losing track of time, 2019, because we put out our last album then, and we just did a run of like just shows in Australia, so we only 6 or 7 shows or something like that, and that was meant to be sort of just, it was only around the time of our album launch, so we thought, well, we've got to go back through and do another leg, and we'll start to do some of the regional places as well, and then we'll start to go overseas and start doing some of the places we've been previously, and we started to get offers to go starting in Southeast Asia, and we're trying to get back to Japan, but we didn't lock anything in. We hadn't even sort of confirmed any dates. We had a couple of offers here and there. And funnily enough, some stuff I've told a few people on the podcast before, but like, you know, we had to turn down for other reasons. And this is pre sort of, you know, all the pandemic stuff kicking in. And I remember kicking myself going, I can't believe that we're canceling this stuff. Like, or we're not accepting it, I should say. You know, the 16-year-old me would be just kicking himself going, what are you doing? You're breaking my heart. And then funnily enough, those dates roll along and they're all canceled. Like just the whole thing's abolished straight away. So you think, okay, well, at least, you know, I know that deep down it was never going to happen anyway. But but we were lucky. I think we're similar to you guys in a way. Like, you know, we got to a point where you can't just pick up the phone and go, guys, let's go and play a gig, like, you know, next week or in a month's time or something like that. There's a lot of planning and scheduling, you know, that has to be put into place, and it's a tough machine to get firing and lubricated, you know. Yes. So you have to plan a long way in advance. So but we're sort of sitting there, sort of stagnant a little bit from a touring point of view now.
Yeah, it's difficult, especially, and that's the hardest part too. Not only, you know, being ready to be able to, play these shows, because, you know, all the rehearsal, that's time and effort that you put in behind it to put on not just a gig, but a show, you know. So, and being locked down, we weren't able to rehearse as a band for ages, you know, like. And that was, I think that kind of put a little bit of a dampener on the band's spirit a little bit. Just, you know, I mean, we have our own little sort of group chat on our phones, and we chat to each other every single day practically, you know, try to lighten the situation with, you know, some jokes and poke fun at each other and all that kind of stuff. And we're all sort of very hopeful about getting back together and rehearsing. And it looks like that we'd probably be doing that in the coming weeks with our, you know, vaccinations are up in the past month or so. So it looks like we're seeing light at the end of the tunnel for that, which is really, really good. It'd be good to sort of see all the boys again. You know, I definitely miss that camaraderie, you know, that you have together with your bandmates and that. So it's something that we're all looking forward to, you know.
It's that morale thing is such a massive thing that doesn't get talked about a lot. I think we sort of just either take it for granted or we're not aware of it until it's gone. Because, I mean, even like I've noticed it more so probably in the last couple of months, let alone probably the last 18 months. But, you know, a lot of bands are sort of just reevaluating, or musicians are reevaluating where they sit in the world. And, you know, you're seeing bands that are starting to call it quits or go on hiatus, or musicians who are deciding that, you know, they're gonna take a big career change and do something completely different. And I think some of that, obviously, you know, having time to think, but I think also not being able to interact with your mates and your peers and sort of bouncing these ideas off each other. And you can do it online, you can do it in your group chats and things like that, but it's not the same as being in person, is it?
No, it's not. Yeah. I mean, look, as far as sharing ideas and things like that, that's cool. It's, you know, often Chris or one of the other guys will load up a little snippet of an MP3 or something like that, just or MP4 rather, just to show us, hey, I'm, you know, I'm working on this idea. What do you think? But then it's like, cool. It kind of stops there because then you can't expand on that idea by getting together and getting into a rehearsal room and jamming out that idea in a live scenario or you know, and seeing what kind of other, you know, other kind of, I don't know, musical sort of inspiration that comes along that creates music when we create music together, you know what I mean? Mm-hmm. It's difficult in that aspect. So, you know what, in saying that though, that last album that we've done, it was pretty much written in its entirety without a whole band being together. You know, and that was a tough thing to do. that was a tough thing to do.
It would have been completely different to, because there was a massive gap between that last album and the album before that. I think what six or seven years.
Yeah, well, pushing nearly 7 years. You know, and just you know, a lot of things happened in that time. It wasn't for the lack of material or anything like that. Just a lot of life sort of experiences that most people tend to go through in a lifetime. I personally went through in a very short period of time, you know. That was pretty tough, yeah. I mean, I had quite a few health issues that sort of set me back. Sort of started off in probably around about 2016, 17. I'm not sure if too many people know, but I suffer from Crohn's disease.
Okay.
So if you don't know what Crohn's disease is, probably best described as like irritable bowel syndrome or something like that, you know, where your immune system sort of attacks yourself. So that's something that I've chronically been sort of fighting for a very long time, and been hospitalised twice for that, actually. And that really knocks you out. Just mentally, physically, can't do anything, and it's just a terrible situation to sort of be in when you're in like that. And I suffered because I couldn't really be the person I wanted to be with the boys and just go to rehearsal and, you know, lay down tracks and things like that. I couldn't do that, any of that vocals work that I wanted to do, because I was physically unable to. You know, it got to a point where I wouldn't say I kind of fell into a depression of some sort, but it was kind of one of those things where you just think, far out, you know, what else can go wrong, you know? And then sure enough, other things went wrong. After a while, I developed what was called a vocal granuloma. I think that sort of came across, when did that sort of start? I reckon that sort of started back in late 2018, or mid-2018. A vocal granuloma is basically an ulcer on your vocal cord.
Sounds painful.
It is. So I couldn't talk for several months. So it was literally with pen and paper, asking questions to people that I needed stuff or whatever it is. So singing was completely off the cards. I couldn't sing for at least 14 months or so, you know. That was hard. That was a hard thing to do, because, like, it's almost like, I don't know, could you imagine yourself not practicing for, you know, over a year? Getting back into the swing of things, it's almost like you're teaching yourself again how to play an instrument or how to re-sing again. And that's how I felt after that long period of time. You know, I can remember the day, and I was, Andy, it was so clear, man. Like, I can remember the day when I started to go, right, I'm going to start rehearsing on my own again and just start to build up my strength and do all my vocal warm-ups and scales and my practice sort of regime that I go through. And I just couldn't get a note out that was anywhere near any kind of pitch or any kind of note that I was trying to aim for. And it got to a point where I sat on the floor and I was just laughing. I'm like, this is just ridiculous. Why can't I just get that note, you know, that I just can do so easily before? And now it was literally like I was, you know, 10 years old learning how to sing. That feeling of just being completely helpless and like, not so much angry at myself, but just like that frustration that kind of set in. And then that I just went into a hysterical laugh because I was like, I just couldn't believe I couldn't do what I normally do, you know? which came kind of second nature to me to do after all these years. But just at that point, I just couldn't hit a note at all, you know? And it was definitely a frightening sort of experience to go through. I missed out on some shows, you know. Yeah.
Oh, that's right. I remember that. That's probably a quick little thing to worth noting is, you had, who was it? Was it Cal come in from Battlebard? And he did a show or two in replacement of yourself. I mean,
he did,
What sort of feelings were going through your head leading up to that, and even when the shows were happening and realizing that you're not there, and no doubt this, I would assume it's the first time that you haven't performed with the band and the band's performing elsewhere.
Yes. Yeah. It was something that I knew I didn't want to cancel shows again. I cancelled a show with Camelot in 2018 and I was, you know, so livid about that. I was just so disappointed with myself that I had to, but I knew physically I couldn't do that. But then there was that show that we got Cal to do for us. I thought you guys have got to keep going. You know, don't let me hold you back. You know, and this is me talking to the boys. And we had this meeting, and we were like, you know, the shows have been booked. You know, tickets have been sold. People are expecting somewhat of a show. Just we've got to give them something. We couldn't let anyone down, you know. And I felt like I was letting a lot of people down. And I was so disappointed in myself for not being able to be physically able to do these shows. But I was grateful that we had someone to step into my little shoes and, I think he pulled it off okay. I heard some pretty good reports that, you know, for what he, you know, from where he came from the style of singing that he had, he did put his own spin on it. And the feedback that I got, a lot of people did enjoy it. So, and that made me feel really good.
Yeah.
You know, And the boys were like just happy to be out there playing live again as well too, you know. So because I think that was a long time between drinks as well, doing absolutely. Those shows as well.
Yeah, and I think, I mean, I've had the same experience, but not due to health reasons, but for other reasons. I was physically not in the country, and the guys got offered to support Queensryche in Sydney, and I'm. In where was I? I was in Prague with my wife on a honeymoon, and it's just like, guys, you got to do it. You know, I mean, I think we've sort of in the back of our minds, we always had these thoughts about what would happen in these types of scenarios if something did pop up and someone wasn't available, and how easy it would be for us to get a friend in or get somebody that could come in and keep the thing moving. And Tim even jokes himself. He goes, oh, you know, maybe one day I won't be able to do it. I'm like, oh, Tim, I don't know. That might be pushing the limit because you really sort of carry this fucking band. But sure, okay, we'll keep that in mind. But I think we sort of realize that the band's bigger than us individually, and you know, where possible, the machine needs to keep moving as much as possible. And that was, I mean, it was a very surreal moment because, you know, while they're on stage and I've got, you know, I'm getting text messages from people or message on Facebook or whatever. And I'm sitting in a cafe at, like, you know, in Prague at like 11 o'clock in the morning or whatever, drinking beers. And I'm just thinking, wow, this is weird. You know, I'm really enjoying where I am at the moment. This is great. But at the same time, like, my guys are on stage now and somebody else is doing what I would normally do. And this is the first time ever. And you know, it wasn't all pleasant feelings. Like, I certainly felt like I was missing out and, you know, you weren't part of it. But I think it just sent a strong message to all of us that, you know, we're, you know, none of us alone should try to stop the band from moving forward, you know, where it's realistic to do so. So when I saw that, you know, you went through this yourself and obviously for different circumstances, but ultimately the same situation, from a live point of view, so those similar feelings came back to me. I thought, oh yeah, like, I wonder if it was a similar sort of feeling for you, just sort of being on the outside looking in, and especially for you. I mean, you've been, you know, part of the band since day dot and a lot longer than sort of my tenure in Lord. But no doubt a very, very surreal and unusual experience to be in.
Definitely a very surreal experience to go through. Definitely. I totally agree. You know, like you say, not to say that everyone's replaceable, but it's one of those things where the music is somewhat, you know, bigger than the individual, like you said, you know. I'm glad people went to the gigs, and I'm glad that they did enjoy it in the end. You know, I'm coming back.
Yeah, come on, John Farnham.
Yeah,
you're back.
Again. Yeah, I'm coming back, mate. This is my comeback shows. You know, so, but yeah, so hopefully I'll get to see all those people that I didn't get to see last time.
Yeah, and I think, you know, I think people who got to see those shows on that last run of, or those last shows that happened, you know, they get to see something unique. And I think also knowing what they're about to see as well makes it a little bit special and something that not a lot of other people will ever get to experience themselves. So you can kind of get away with doing a little bit of an abstract version of what you normally are. And it's you know, a special occasion, even though the origins of why it's happening are, you know, not always pleasant, but at least you can sort of try and capture it as something unique and then move on and get back into action and do what you're good at doing.
True. Yeah. Well, we're talking about it now as it being a unique situation where we, you know, having someone else sing your songs, or you know, you're absolutely correct. You know, that's not something that anyone from you know, another part of the world would have been able to see. So
yeah,
in a live scenario. So it was a special thing.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely. Without making it into like a medical podcast, I am a little bit curious about a couple of the things you just spoke about. I think from a Crohn's point of view, I've got a couple of family members very close to me that have, one has Crohn's, the other one's got, what's it? Ulcerative colitis or something like that. It's a type of Crohn's. And you know, I've, two very different experiences from those people, but I think just the transition of obviously not understanding what's wrong to then finally working out a diagnosis and then trying to find treatment, and then I think ultimately, you know, from what I understand, it's a thing that you live with, you know, and you've got to readjust your life to sort of accept this in a way and try to change different things in your life to be able to, you know, mitigate the symptoms that originally plagued you when it was undiagnosed. I mean, How long did it take you to understand what was going wrong or what was up, and then sort of getting to a point where I would assume, like, where you are now, like, it's something that you're able to manage and take care of. But, I mean, what was that period of time? What did it look like?
It was really scary. I can recall one day just collapsing on the bathroom floor and just literally curled up into a ball with some excruciating pain, just coming from my lower abdomen. And the pain was so severe, like I couldn't control the yells and screams it was like literally someone stabbing me. Mm. If anyone knows what that feels like, but that's probably the only way I can really kind of describe it, really. It was just like a real sharp sort of stabbing kind of pain that was just constant, you know, and it just didn't go away. And that was frightful because I was like, what the, you know, hell's going on, you know? And usually everyone's sort of mostly, for the better part, in control of their own bodies. But when something like that happens, so involuntary, where it just takes over, the pain is just so excruciating, you start to be real fearful and frightful of, you know, what's happening around you. And I was just like, I just didn't know what to do. So I think we rushed off to the hospital and, I was in emergency for the better part of 16 hours, just on some painkillers. At that stage, I'm just trying to remember the chain of events that happened. Just started taking all these tests until probably 4 or 5 days later, I was still in hospital. After being admitted, that's when they sort of said, "Look, you've had a severe bout of Crohn's disease, an inflammatory situation where your bowels are severely ulcerated, and I was bleeding internally, and wasn't really a good thing to go through." And I thought to myself, all right, I think I'm a pretty healthy kind of guy. You know, I'm not overweight or anything like that, and I eat fairly healthy as well too. So I'm not a smoker. I'm not a massive drinker. And I thought to myself, well, what is it that's causing this? And no one could give me an answer. No one knows when it comes or how it comes. No one knows. There isn't a cure for it. Mm. There's just sort of a system in place to sort of manage the pain and sort of control the inflammatory bouts that happen with Crohn's disease and colitis and those kind of things. So for me, it was a scary thing that happened to me, and I learnt very, very quickly all about this this disease, you know. So it was a frightful event that, you know, having to go through, not knowing what's happening to you, and then, you know, sort of realizing you've got this for the rest of your life now, you know.
I think that's the toughest part. Like, just, you know, just from, you know, secondhand experiences of people that I know, getting that information, you know, that confirmation that this is not going away. It's not something that you can, take and eventually over time it'll go forever. It's always going to be there. And I watched these people come to terms with that. And that's a really tough thing because, you know, there's just so much to it. And just what you explained or described, just having various versions of that happening to others. Can't imagine the weight of having to process that and understand what do you do moving forward.
Yeah, it's hard. It's almost a lifestyle change as well too. you know, trying to, you know, I mean, some doctors were saying, you know, having a stressful kind of lifestyle as well too can sort of exacerbate the symptoms. I guess at the time I was going through quite a bit of a challenging period, not only through, you know, the vocal granuloma periods, but dad was in a home, and he had diabetes and suffered from Alzheimer's as well, and so, you know, looking after dad in a home was pretty difficult. Mum had a lot on her plate for doing that as well too. He passed away in 2018, mm-hmm. and so that sort of, you know, I don't know if that sort of created a bit more of a flare up in my health with it, you know, having that stressful period of what happened to my father. But it could have, but I just don't know. Mm. You know, yeah. So it's a tough thing having to go through, you know, having to deal with your elderly parents, and then you've got your own health issues, and then you worry about not being able to tour, and you worry about not being able to record, and you know, all these setbacks one after another, you know, kind of added to that whole period of why it was 6-7 years before we released an album. Yeah, sometimes it's a bit of a hard thing to sort of, a bit of pill to swallow, not being able to sort of release things a lot sooner, as much as I'd like to. Life does get in the way, you know. I think a lot of, sometimes fans don't realise that.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, you know.
Come to Brazil.
Yeah.
That's equivalent.
I'd love to, you know, as much as I'd love to do every fan's request to, you know, play in their own backyard for their, you know, 21st or 16th birthday. Yeah, no problem. One day I'll get to do that. That's definitely on the bucket list. I'd love to do that, play someone's backyard, you know. But yeah, it's hard, man, especially when you're having to go through that period. You know, 2019, my mother passed away. Mm. So that was another thing that was another setback as well too. That was kind of unexpected. Mum passed away within 13 days, not knowing that there was anything wrong with her. Mm. So that was a bit of a shock to me and to my family and everyone else around me, you know. And that was really at a period where I was in the middle of recording, having the strength to build up after having not, you know, sung for such a long time. That was at a period where I had sort of built up enough strength and kind of got back to what I felt comfortable enough to put lay vocals down on a record, you know. Yeah, and then when Mum passed, yeah, just once again, things just went on hiatus for a little while, you know, and then, yeah, well, the rest is history then. After that, I just thought, you know, I've just got to get back into it again. Yeah, enough shit has happened to me in that 7-year period. I thought I've just got to keep going. I think it's that human spirit, yeah, when your back's against the wall, you've got to keep going forward. So to speak,
yeah,
you know?
Yeah, absolutely. Mate, I know some time's passed, but my condolences for you folks. I mean, yeah, it's something. Thanks, I think, man. Yeah, we all fear and you know, it's an inevitable thing that happens to all of us, but, yeah, it doesn't make it any easier. So, yeah, and I think it's fascinating to, I don't even know if fascinating is the right word, but I'll stick with it for the time being, but it's fascinating to hear you, like, talk through all these things that have happened, like, you know, really it's been a short space of time. I mean, you know, from a, you know, the stereotypes or the expectations of what bands typically do, you know, 6 or 7 years is a long time, but in life, I mean, that's a, that's a lot of shit that's happening in a very short window, you know, and that's a lot to process and a lot to adjust. And I could only begin to imagine that there were probably many times where you sort of just almost having to try and take a step back and just look at everything, you know, just reevaluating everything around you, because constantly just the goalposts keep changing, you know, and not in your favor, what it would appear. You know, like one thing that I've spoken to a lot of mates on the podcast that, you know, play in bands and people that you'll know as well. And I think there's always this underlying stress and anxiety about, you know, the identity of being a musician and trying to push forward and trying to get stuff out and tour. And, you know, you see what your mates are doing. So it's like, oh, well, you know, they get to go to Europe. I want to go to Europe, or they got that support, or they just released that album, or whatever it might be. And it's friendly competition, but it keeps us driven. But I think it's that anxiety, yeah, and that stress to keep moving. And I think especially when you're in your 20s and you sort of get into your 30s, you're putting all your eggs in one basket. You're the musician. You know, it's who you are. You are the guy from that band. And then life sort of catches up with you, and, you know, you start, yeah, to slow down, and you have to balance things out with everything else. But, and so a lot of people that I've spoken to, especially when they've hit their 30s, you know, they sort of look in the rear vision mirror and go, what have I done so far with my life? Am I happy? You know, and do I need to do some other things? And I just think, like, what you just described, you know, you would have gone through versions of that long ago in the past. Not to say that you're really old.
Thanks, mate.
But, you know, this period of time would have, I've no doubt, thrown you into a tailspin in a similar way, where you've, you know, did you sort of question yourself when it came to, you know, the band and music and things like that, because these larger, more important things were happening around you?
There were times, let's be honest here. Yeah, there were times where I thought I'm holding Vanishing Point back from doing what they should be doing. You know, there were times where I was considering saying to the guys, listen, you know, I think you guys should continue, but without me. You know, it was one of those things where when you get hit down so many times, you know, and then when you're down, you sort of then get kicked in the guts with something else that happens. You kind of think, well, you know, the band's, as much as I live and breathe Vanishing Point, the band is not something that's sitting up on a high priority list as far as your health and family and, your children and all those kind of things that kind of take precedent over being in a band, you know. Most definitely it's one of those decisions that was difficult to make, but for me, although, you know, there were times where I thought about it and, you know, had those conversations with my guitar player Chris, as you know, we kind of said, look, we're in a position where we're not one of those huge bands where the demand is, you know, massive tours around the world or anything like that. As much as we take our music very seriously, and as much as we take, you know, doing our live shows very seriously, we're not one of those bands that are out there as much as someone else who are, you know, probably 10 times bigger than what we are, you know. So I thought to myself, you know, there's still room for Vanishing Point in my life. There's still room to do what I enjoy day in, day out. So I made that conscious decision to keep going and keep doing what I want to do, you know, and that is to play and create music. It's just one of those things that I don't think I can't live without it in my life. And that was probably one of those things. I thought it's been an integral part of my life since I was 14 years old. You know, I'm 47 now, so do the math. you know, I can't just stop. You know, I can certainly stop for a period of time till I get back on my feet after a, you know, all these events that have happened. But then I want to keep going. You know what I mean? I want to keep creating stuff and getting back out on the live scene and, you know, meeting the fans and, you know, just being in a band again, you know, because I think that's what I truly needed to really get me back out of the rut that, you know, physically I was in, mentally I was in, you know, just listening to the new songs that just gave me a bit of vitality to sort of want to do it even more, you know. That's probably what's kind of pulled me out of this. Yeah.
It's yeah, I think I see a few bands that sort of have a little bit more tenure now slow down, but not because of anything that's necessarily against their will, but just because of life, really. It's just, you know, that's just life comes into play and there's a lot more balance that has to be taken into account with, you know, priorities and family and careers and all sorts of stuff. And music's no longer that full-time gig or that full-time pursuit that it used to be.
Yeah.
And I think, you know, I've certainly gone through that. You know, I'm 10 years younger than you. So I'm sort of, you know, I've been going through a lot of that over the past several years with...
Thanks for making a point of that, mate.
Yeah, I just wanted to... Yeah, I know. I was trying to find a way to shoehorn that one in. Yeah.
Okay.
Is that something you want me to clip out?
No, that's fine. That's fine.
That's all right. They can look up our date of births. So, but yeah, I've been, yeah, a lot of these sort of thoughts along the way, and as you get pulled in different directions for good reasons or for other reasons, and you have to be really realistic about it. And where do you put your eggs? And you can't always just put them in the one basket. And then I think from what we've done over the years in the band is that, you know, we can afford to have gaps of time and we can go off and do other things, or, you know, we can, you know, pull back a little bit and not go full steam for a period of time. And, you know, when it all comes out in the wash later on, you know, years and years down the track, no one notices those gaps. Like no one understands or remembers or even sort of acknowledges that there were gaps in time. And I've used the example heaps of times. Like I look at, you know, a shelf full of CDs and I'm looking at bands that we all know, and you look at the albums in, you know, in order of release, and then you notice that there's like long periods of time between albums, and they're not always necessarily touring, but, you know, years and years down the track, you don't know that, you know, and you don't care. And I think for me, that sort of helped. And I think a lot of other people that I've known over the years, that sort of larger perspective of understanding that, you know, we don't have to always move so quickly all the time. And sometimes we just have to attend to life, other aspects of life, and then we can come back and it's all good, and we can pick it up where we left off. Or, you know, in your case, you know, having to maybe start from scratch in some aspects, you know, with your voice. But it sort of just takes a bit of that stress and that pressure off you, that, you know, the needle has to keep being, you know, it has to keep moving all the time.
Yeah. Oh, I totally agree. There was a time and period where we were having a bit of that pressure as well too, with, you know, some certain record labels sort of wondering, hey, what's going on, you know? And then you're pushed back on the roster of bands that are on the label, because, you know, for them it's one of those things where, you know, no fault of their own, but you fall out of a bit of a momentum once you start releasing music. And if you're not sort of releasing music every, you know, 2 years or so, you kind of you got to try and sort of reinvent the band again and remind people, hey, that we're sort of still around. And it's a difficult thing to do, especially when you don't have any money to do it. It's a... You know, the cost of advertising and all that kind of stuff comes into play. But it's a hard thing especially when band members come and go. You know, that too. I mean, we've had quite a few members leave and you know, come back and then leave again, and it's purely because of that, those life scenarios, you know, having kids and getting married or moving to a different place, and all those things come into factor, and you know, people are people. They sort of reevaluate and say, all right, what's more important to me right now, my family or music? Or so that, and that happens, you know, quite regularly in a lot of bands, I would imagine, but it's happened quite a few times with us. We've got a couple of new members as well too that haven't yet played live. So yeah, Damien and Gaston, new drummer, new bass player. So these guys are screaming, itching to get out onto the live scene and, you know, do some live shows as well.
It's like welcome to the band, and you can just sit down and just wait because it's going to be a while before you play.
Yep. That's exactly how it has been. You know, they're very, very patiently sort of, you know, been sitting down and waiting until we're able to even rehearse again.
Yeah.
You know? But yeah, it's. I guess the other thing too is, I don't know if you guys find it difficult, is that being that we're in Australia, it's not so easy for us. You know, we're on this little island away from the rest of the world, you know, where we can't just jump on a plane and 30 minutes we're in another country, or, you know, jump on a fast train and an hour or two we're in another country where we can be doing, you know, shows all across Europe or Asia or even America for that matter, you know what I mean? So it's difficult in that aspect. So we're heavily relying on the internet to sort of push our music out there, you know, when we're, especially in these kind of periods too, you know?
Yeah, I mean, it's incredibly different these days to... Well, even you know, 2 years ago, you know, pre COVID, you know, there was still, you know, we took it for granted, but you know, most people could get out and play shows and still tour. Even for us poor bastards that, you know, in the arse end of the world in Australia, we still had opportunities. And then, you know, all the pandemic stuff, you know, took that away. And you've seen a lot of creativity over the past sort of 18 months of people just trying to keep their little machines moving and try to keep their name out there. And it's been fascinating and, you know, at times a bit heartbreaking, because you can see, you know, some people have really taken advantage of it, you know, found the opportunities, found the silver lining and have really sort of thrived in it. And other people have gone the opposite, and, you know, you can't fault them for being impacted that way as well. And it's just been a very, very interesting time, and just a reminder of just how quickly everything in the world is changing. You know, I'm sure, like, you know, even 10 years ago, you know, you would at that time be saying, well, yeah, things are changing, but probably not as quickly as what they are now. And, you know, something that was, you know, the rule of thumb as far as how to promote your band or record or get something out there, you know, in another month's time or something like that could be, you know, irrelevant or not best practice, or there's a better way, or there's a new app, or there's something out there. It's like, oh shit, yeah. gotta try and keep up here. It's getting exhausting.
Yeah, I know. It is exhausting. My goodness, is it exhausting? Because I mean, as well as trying to stay on top of all that kind of stuff, I mean, you've got your family, your friends, and just work as well too, because we're, you know, I mean, being in Vanishing Point's not my full-time gig, you know, so I run my own business as well. So, and that's quite demanding at times, where it's my hours are just any hours of the day, really. You know, sometimes I'll get emails at 10:30, 11 o'clock at night, and you know, it's one of those processes that you sort of put yourself out there, especially when you're running your own business, you know what I mean? So, yeah, definitely a difficult thing to sort of juggle and manage.
I always forget that Chris isn't an OG of Vanishing Point. Because he's just been with the band for so many years, I just thought, he was just there from the beginning. But I know he came in a little bit after In Thought came out. But, I mean, you guys have been the mainstay almost since the beginning. You're one of the OGs. I mean, thinking back to probably just for the sake of Chris, around the time Chris joining the band and, Tangled in Dream coming out and all that, I mean... Mm-hmm. If you're sitting, well, you are sitting here now, but sitting here now and sort of looking back to where your minds were at then versus now and how you see music or how you even saw the band at that time versus how you see it now. I mean, obviously, you know, you kind of explained how you've had to adjust, but is it just worlds apart as far as just how you see music and how you see yourself in this whole music game?
Yeah, definitely worlds apart. I mean, back in those days, 95, 94, we took being in the band very, very seriously. It was one of those moments where we were in a garage rehearsing, and we kind of made that pact. We were like, well, this is it, boys. We want. If we're going to do this, we're going to do this right. And we were all on the same page, and we were rehearsing four nights a week, religiously. We were such a fine-tuned machine. We'd get in there, and we'd do maybe three sets straight from back to back, and no one would ever make a mistake. You know what I mean? It was. Totally different to now because we make mistakes all the time now. but it was that mindset of just, all right, we want to be where our favourite bands that we admire so much, we want to be at that level, you know. I think I recall making this comment on a radio station many years ago saying, and I got shit canned for it, but I didn't care. But I said, you know, hey, I had this teenage, you know, sort of dream or aspiration to be a rock star. Mm. Yeah. And I think the radio announcer kind of chuckled to himself, and then I got some online comments saying what a tosser I was or anything like that. And this was like the very beginning of Vanishing Point. Well, we were just nobodies. We were just literally a garage band. And I think back to that moment, you know, I think back to that moment. It's like my mindset at that time was like, no, I really want to be a rock star. You know, I just had this, you know, notion that this is what I want to do for the rest of my life, you know. And it's still to this day, I kind of think back to that moment and I think, you know, you get pushed down when people tell you, oh, you're wasting your time with, you know, music, mate. Just go get a real job, you know. And I'm like, well, you know what, mate? I do have a real job, but I'm not going to waste my time not being in a band because I enjoy it. You know, I mean, I kind of throw that scenario of some people like to play football or go to the gym or have some other hobby in their life apart from their own mundane work life. You know? So, and I find solace in music and I have right through my whole entire career. But it has changed just purely because, you know, those life events that happen, you know. So it has changed dramatically over the years of being in Vanishing Point from when I first started with VP.
Did you resist some of that to begin with? Like when you realised, I don't know if you had a moment where you realised, oh, well, I'm not going to be that rock star that you had in your head many years ago, you know, or, you know, not the version that you originally thought, and you could see yourself having to balance all these different things that were happening in your life as you get older. Was there a bit of resistance to that to begin with, or did you sort of just naturally find yourself there and go, oh, this is what life looks like now?
I think at the time I was so adamant about, you know, succeeding. You know, failure wasn't really an option. I just wanted to be in a band. I just wanted to sing. I just wanted to go out and play live. I wanted all these things. I wouldn't say I manifested it to happen, but because I wanted it so much, I literally just made it happen. You know, like we went out and did these shows. We went out and rehearsed so many nights a week. We worked hard at it. You know, so it's one of those things where the resistance probably came, I don't know if resistance is the right word, but when these life experiences came along, like, for example, starting up a family, you know, getting married, getting divorced and getting remarried again, and, you know, dealing with, you know, just health issues and things like that, that's where the resistance then came later on. We sort of touched on that previously. But in the beginning, no, it was full steam ahead, mate. Yeah, it was like, this is what I want to do. Yeah, I hated working, didn't want to go to school, you know. Then realised, shit, I need money to survive. you know, it's
a similar path that most of us go down. You have these wake-up calls, you know, at different points in your life. You go, oh, that's right. And often, years later, you'll have family members that go, oh, I remember when I told you that when you were 14 or 15 or whatever, and you told me to get stuffed. It's like, oh, yeah, okay, thanks for reminding me. Yes, you're right, But, you know, at the time, you know, it's very hard to convince otherwise. But, you have to. I think sometimes you have to just find it out yourself, and sometimes the hard way.
Yeah, absolutely. but that was all right. I think I did okay in the end.
I think you did, mate. And like, to be honest, I mean, the album you guys put out last year was just like incredible, and I think especially incredible considering, you know, the time that's passed. And I mean, knowing you guys and you know, I've spoken to Chris a bunch of times over the years, and just knowing the challenges that have just been facing everybody, and just having to try and keep things moving, and to see that come out of all that is inspiring. I think it's exciting from another musician's point of view. And I think for me, like, you know, big fan of the band, always have been, you know, especially, you know, when I was discovering, you know, what Australian music was all about and trying to work out who's who. And you guys were one of those early bands that I certainly latched onto. So it's been exciting to see, you know, what you guys have still been able to do, you know, despite all the madness that's been circulating us. And I guess, you know, as frustrating as, you know, the postponements and all the sort of kinks in the road, the fact that you guys are still ploughing ahead is great. And it's sort of reassuring to a lot of the rest of us that, you know, there's plenty of time and we can all get back out there and keep doing our thing.
Yeah, thanks, man. I appreciate that. Yeah, thank you so much.
And
that's pretty cool.
So from I'll keep it on the time, but obviously some new dates. So by the time this comes out, there'll probably be some new dates. So I'll chuck some links in so people can check it out, and I'll plug them in the outro so people know where to go. But what else is happening behind the scenes? Is the main focus at the moment just getting out and playing some shows, or are you guys sort of tinkering away in the workshop with new tunes and keeping that stuff moving?
Most definitely. As far as new tunes go, if you talk to Chris, he'll say, yeah, we've got enough material for another two albums. So, but it's one of those things where we'll have to sit down together and dissect everything, and we'll probably, out of all those ideas, we'll probably have enough for, you know, one album, not two. You know what I mean? So, because you know what it's like, you have so many ideas and then you kind of think, oh, you know what, let's shelve that because it's not quite there yet, and we'll get back to it later, that type of stuff, you know. So, but there is a lot of new material that is, you know, sitting in a computer somewhere that, you know, requires a lot of attention to, you know, start working on the vocal melodies, start working on lyrics, and start introducing it in a sort of live rehearsal scenario to see how it sounds in the live aspect. Because often enough, you'd be writing something in your bedroom or lounge room or wherever we're creating music, but then bring that same piece that sounds amazing in your headphones or speakers that you're listening to, you know, in a live sense, or, you know, and bring it into a live rehearsal scenario, and it would sound completely different to what you're listening to, and you think it's something's not right. So there's little tweaks that you need to do before finalizing, you know, a complete song before it's ready to go down on a CD. But yeah, there's enough music for us to keep going with. We're just really hopeful that we can get back together again in the rehearsal room so we can start, you know, firing up these songs in a live sense, just to see what that, because I mean, we listen to them all the time on our computers, all the ideas, and, you know, try to get those creative juices flowing with ideas and all that kind of stuff. But then it's like, all right, we need to get together. You know, we need to get together and try to jam these out, just see how they truly sound, you know, together. But yeah, hopefully it's not another 6 or 7 years before the next album comes out, Andy. Yeah.
And if it is, then that's okay. It's fine.
Yeah.
There's no pressure, mate. You guys just, when you're ready, you're ready. All good.
Okay. I'm glad you said that. I'm gonna tell Chris. I'm gonna say Andy said not to rush this one.
I'm gonna get some messages from him.
Yeah, you will.
What are you fucking talking about? Now go and grab the latest album, Dead Elysium, over at vanishing-point.com.au. And I'm going to have all the links to everything in the show notes over at andysocial.net, andydowling.net, the website, the social media pages, the streaming links, some video clips, all that kind of stuff's going to be over there. If you're around, depending on when you listen to this, the guys have got rescheduled tour dates for May and June of 2022. And they're playing places like Melbourne, Adelaide, Brisbane, Canberra, Sydney. And maybe there might be some more dates by the time those dates roll around, who knows, but stay tuned and follow the guys on the socials. Definitely purchase a ticket and support these guys who have been just doing it for so long, since the mid-90s. Incredible stuff, and stoked that they're still firing away and putting out amazing music. So definitely, if you're new to Vanishing Point, start off with the brand new album, Dead Elysium, and then dig your way through that back catalogue. Find those gems. There's plenty of them. Go and check it all out. So before we wrap it up, of course, patreon.com/AndyDowling. I've removed all the tiers except for the $1 tier and the $5 tier. That's $1 per month or $5 per month. It is an amazing way to support this podcast, and it takes a little bit of the load off the monthly expenses of hosting the podcast, hosting the website, the editing, the production, the gear, whatever it might be. But more importantly, it's to have an ever-growing platform of people that support this podcast and help it to grow, but also to become a tool that we can use to help elevate and promote these amazing people who've been on the podcast, whether it be in music or otherwise. All these endeavors and projects and businesses and things that people have just thrown their lives into, I'm hoping that the antisocial community becomes this natural sort of reaction every time someone's on the podcast, and after they've been on the podcast, just continuing to give love and support, and you know, giving them social media love, supporting them by purchasing products or whatever it might be, or just talking about them and just hyping them up. So I'm hoping that Patreon is a little bit of a tool that can help sort of facilitate some of that stuff. So jump on over there. If you can spare a buck or $5 a month, I would absolutely love you long time. So go and check it out over at patreon.com/AndyDowling. And that's a wrap, folks. That's enough. That's enough crapping on from me. Another episode in the bag, another one coming very, very soon. So until then, take care and ta-ta. Larry, please.